Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. Today, you've got myself, Spencer, and Nathan on the show today. We're going to be talking about Windows and Active Directory hardening. Now, Nathan is an IT security professional, and in this episode, we're going to kind of explore strategies, best practices, in some advice for securing Active Directory, hardening Active Directory, Windows. We really want to have a discussion around several topics within that domain and hopefully provide you listening with some actionable advice for securing your organization against cyber attacks. We're going to talk about least privilege. We'll talk about insecure defaults, tiered admin, CIS benchmarks, security monitoring, and kind of all that kind of stuff that goes into Active Directory and Windows and hardening it against attack. So without further ado, Nathan, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on, and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Spencer.
Great. So I think, you know, you definitely have a great background in IT and security, and I think you have a lot of great perspective. And you know, talking to you before the episode, I think listeners would probably have some, I think it would be good for people to hear your background a little bit of what you're willing to share as far as your experience and your kind of perspective on security as a whole. And then we'll kind of go into some of the topics that we kind of had outlined for the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, a little bit of background on myself. I started out in the IT industry quite young. I'm a third generation systems administrator and technology professional. My great grandfather was a telecommunications specialist, and then my grandfather a Unix systems administrator, and then my father got into Unix systems administration as well and started his own VAR. Moved from the VAR, doing various MSP things, doing RAID storage, Unix administration. Worked on a number of federal government projects with the Jet Propulsion Laboratories, nearly every Mars rover project, which was super awesome. And then eventually branched out to managing IT departments for other places and security practices and some consulting work on the side and things like that. And that's a little bit of background on myself there.
Awesome. Yeah. So definitely, definitely one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show because of that background. I think you have a good perspective in a wide, in a number of industries and in a number of environments. And I think with that comes a lot of experience and kind of seeing things done right, seeing things done not so right, kind of picking up the pieces and fixing things, making things more secure. So looking forward to this.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So when we talk about, Windows and Active Directory hardening, what comes to mind when we say hardening? You know, what do you think are we talking about, and what are kind of the goals of hardening? You know, let's start there.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I think about hardening, kind of from our conversations that we've had in the past, I think basic hygiene of Active Directory is one of the topics that gets overlooked quite a bit. Resetting passwords, enforcing passwords, the tiered security model. But basic hygiene seems to be something that I come across a lot in a lot of different environments and have come across. And I think on that topic, it's difficult for a lot of organizations. They have legacy domains, they have legacy protocols, they have misconfigs, they have Active Directory that they bought from as far back as 2000, 2003, all the way up to trying to get into 2022 and 2025 coming around the corner and bringing all of that baggage with them. Basic hygiene is one of those things that really hits home for hardening. Moving beyond that, moving into, the tiered security model and the enterprise access model from Microsoft and getting into, the CIS benchmarks and CIS hardening on desktops and being able to implement that and being able to, navigate through some of CIS and some of the difficulties of that. And you feel free to stop me wherever you want, because I can go on about it all day long. But getting into the CIS side and just learning how to use the basic system to be able to download your benchmarks and then download your hardening guides, and then realizing how much of a burden that those things take off you. Even on the Active Directory side, finding a collaborative pen tester to work with. I mean, not giving a shout out, but not giving a shout out here, but my interaction with you and working with you on some various pen testing, finding a collaborative pen tester is, I can't tell you how much of a breath of fresh air it was, and how it assisted in my hardening of Active Directory to have a pen tester that, wanted to talk through the process, wanted to collaborate through the process, rather than, the standard run of the mill, like, I'm here, I'm going to do my stuff, I'm going to give you a report, don't talk to me, don't do anything, et cetera. And having that collaborative process was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think, I heard somebody say this the other day, and I'm not sure where I heard it. It was probably on the internet somewhere, but to some extent, we're all, there is no blue team, there is no red team, there is no purple team. We're all kind of working for a common goal, and we're all on the same team. That's what I think about when it comes to that kind of stuff. It's, it's not about how fancy we can attack an environment. It's not about, getting domain admin and kind of dancing around in the environment with our tools and our C2 frameworks and post-exploitation tools. It's really about providing value and locking things down. And that's kind of where the inspiration for this episode came from, was, how can we harden environments against attack? We do these pen tests and we see a lot of the same common vulnerabilities, from environment to environment. How do we meaningfully, enact change in these organizations? And I think a lot of it comes down to what you mentioned, the best practices, the blocking and tackling, we like to call it. It's doing the little things well, so that you can build onto those and do the harder things and the more mature things that take a little bit more effort, that are a little bit more complex,
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, talking about that red team, blue team, purple team, and talking about offensive security and security as a whole. And, from my perspective with these misconfigs, these basic hygienes, I mean, there's something kind of, when you look at the security landscape, you look at it all the different vendors and all the different solutions that they provide and all the really cool things. And, I attended a webinar earlier today that was, it was super cool. The things that they were doing were super cool, but I think there's that whole, we kind of had a conversation, a while back about, the unsexy side of this, basic hygiene isn't super awesome. It's not something that I like to talk with my kids about over the dinner table, but at the end of the day, that's the stuff that really does do the block and tackle work for you. It really does. You can have the most advanced things in your environment, but if you don't have the basic hygiene down, all of that is for naught,
Yep. Yeah. And I think it makes sense to kind of talk about, just briefly, the threats that we're kind of facing in a Windows and Active Directory world, in a Windows and Active Directory environment, right? Because we're talking about hardening, we're talking about hardening for a reason, obviously. And it's because, attacks are increasing in volume, they're increasing in sophistication, but they're also increasing in kind of the rudimentary nature, right? We're seeing social engineering and credential stuffing and brute force password attacks on Twitter accounts and all things like that are still working today. Sure. And it speaks to hardening, speaks to best practices and blocking and tackling. And that's why I think this is an important discussion. So, what are, from your perspective, what are some of the things that you're kind of, you think are threats against a Windows and Active Directory world that we should be worried about?
Yeah. I mean, right now, social engineering is, from my standpoint, having applied a lot of these basic hygiene, having applied a lot of, trying to remove misconfigs and legacy protocols and things like that, right now, my perspective, I'm the most afraid of social engineering attacks. I'm most afraid of somebody getting on to a machine and being able to laterally move throughout the environment, being able to Kerberos, being able to, you know, session hijacked or get object forward control. Those are the things that really keep me up at night. And then continuing to try to apply those best practices and that hardening to remove a footprint in the environment. I don't want to allow someone to have a foothold to begin with. You know, I love all my extra fancy cool tools that tell me when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make it as hard as possible to move from that footprint or impossible to get to that footprint. And, you know, applying things like tiered security and applying things like those CIS benchmarks to the desktops, you know, and
yep.
Inviting people like yourself in to pen test my environment to try to figure out where I have shortcomings, because I'm afraid of the user side. I'm afraid of the social engineering.
You know, that's why I'm such a big fan of Assume Breach is, you know, it's only a matter of time before an account gets compromised or someone gets access to an environment, you know, but the goal is, you know, it shouldn't matter, right? You know, in a perfect world, it shouldn't matter if one account gets compromised and it's a non-admin, right? It shouldn't matter if, you know, even if they get, you know, you could argue it shouldn't matter if they get local admin on the device, right? And that's where a lot of the hardening discussion comes in with the tiered admin model, right? And authentication control and things like that. So I think, you know, Assume Breach is just a good model and a good representation to articulate the threats that most Windows and Active Directory environments are facing. And again, it leads to that hardening discussion, which we want to get into some of the details of.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the Assume Breach model for that reason. Because it is my biggest fear. My biggest fear is social engineering attacks, clicking on a link, you know, allowing somebody to remote into your machine, you know, thinking that you're calling Microsoft and, you know, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they're on the machine, they're remoting in, and then what can they do from there?
Yep.
And how can I apply those best practices and that basic hygiene to keep them from being able to move around? Because it's so easy. It's so easy to call up, have somebody give you a fast support or a log me in link or whatever.
Yep.
And then they're on the machine and, yep. You know.
Yeah. And it's funny because as an aside, you know, as paranoid as human beings are, right. And as not trusting as human beings have become, especially in the world today, you know, everything is so polarized. It's left or right. It's black or white. It's, you know, it's either one side or the other. Even with that, people are still trusting enough to just give out their password or give out their social security number or whatever. It's like this weird dichotomy. It's like, we're not trusting of anything unless it's like our password.
Yeah. I mean, some of that comes down to a little bit of psychology with stuff. I mean, sure. I have this conversation a lot, you know, with my peers and, you know, I mean, a lot of our users aren't highly technical people, you know, they're using the computers that we provide to get their job done.
Yeah.
And they see a big thing that says Microsoft needs them to call and, you know, it just hits home and they say, okay, well, it's Microsoft. I should trust them. And,
yep.
And I've seen it time and time again through, phishing campaigns, through, you know, internal phishing campaigns where, you know, you have a crafty enough phishing email or a crafty enough, you know, Chrome bomb that looks nice. And then they'll do it. They'll click on it. They got that brand recognition of Microsoft's calling me. I need to pick up Microsoft's phone call, you know, or I need to call Microsoft. And
I definitely don't blame them either. You know, it's like they should be able to click on a link, right? They're trying to do their job. And to your point, they're not the most technical people to be able to identify those things. And, you know, I think, again, just going back to the hardening discussion and kind of, you know, making it relevant to what we're talking about, you know, in a perfect world, a user would be able to click on a link without fear of getting infected with malware or, you know, getting man in the middle or, you know, getting cookied and getting their Microsoft 365 token stolen, right? There should be controls in place, you know, layered defenses in place to prevent a lot of that stuff from being, you know, the downfall of the entire organization.
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the goal, is to be able to allow them to do their jobs and allow them to click on a link without fear, because, you know, we've safeguarded the environment.
Yep.
You know, and I think, you know, I mean, just diving into like the tiered security model, you know, I mean, that you know, it's had multiple iterations, you know, from, you know, the Red Forest days to tiered security to Microsoft Enterprise Access model to, you know, I think Microsoft's got a new, you know, zero trust enterprise access model that they're kind of initiating.
Yep.
You know, that model I think is overlooked quite a bit. And I think it's overlooked because it seems daunting to implement, and it can be daunting to implement, but that model there it's a phenomenal model to look at. And I think it would behoove any IT department to take a hefty look at tiered security and being able to stop using domain administrators everywhere, stop using, you know, the same administrative accounts for servers and workstations, stop using, you know, widespread administrative sprawl, and go to a tiered security model. Make your tier two admins able to administer your desktops. Make your tier one admins able to administer servers. Make your domain admins or your tier zero admins able to administer domain controllers. And isolating those different environments, you know, really, really hinders that's, I mean.
So, I think that's a great point. And I think a discussion point that would be helpful maybe is, you know, what's your advice for an IT admin right now who's listening to kind of start down that path, to start working towards a tiered admin model? You know, cause you know, let's think about, you know, a AD that is not, you know, the OU structure isn't set up well. It hasn't been configured with that model in mind. So what would be your advice for somebody to kind of start tackling that tiered admin model, and how should they kind of think about it from the starting point and then kind of getting more mature with it?
Start the discussion. Start talking to your peers, start talking to your management. Start the discussion. You know, don't be afraid of, you know, not or getting it right the first time. You know, some things you're not going to be able to fully flesh out and fully apply until it's production. You know, a lot of the tiered security model can be implemented in a passive way. You know, for instance, you can roll out your tiered security model without redacting all of your permissions. You can start to put, you know, additive GPOs rather than redactive GPOs in place to put these administrative models. You know, get that team buy-in, communicate. You know, I don't see tiered security get implemented successfully in very many places. And usually when I see it not be implemented successfully or to fail its implementation, it's because they didn't communicate. There was a lack of understanding of what was going on. There was a lack of understanding of where to use account access. There was a lack of auditing of the use of account access. You know, second thing I would do is get yourself some project management software, get yourself some project management, whether it's an Excel sheet or a Basecamp or a Reich or whatever it is, you know, get yourself a project management sheet and use that to communicate with your team what you're doing, how you're doing it, where you're doing it. From there, get yourself a piece of auditing software, get yourself an Active Directory auditing tool, the Netrix line, something along those lines, and get yourself an auditing tool. Audit that account activity, you know, because you have that communication, you can now communicate when your team's not using it the right way. You can start to educate your team on how to use it the right way, and start auditing it. And when you got that team buy-in and then you're seeing it in action and you're auditing it and you've got a clear and concise project management for it, the implementation is so much easier at that point. I can't tell you how many times I've seen it where someone just says, "Wow, this is a great idea. I'm going to do it. I'm going to implement it." They implement it and then they make everybody mad and then it dies and then it never gets to be used again because everybody has a negative connotation towards it.
Yeah. I think what you mentioned there about getting buy-in, I think is super important, right? Because, you know, you can imagine working on a team of sysadmins and DBAs and developers and all sorts of IT people who need access to various different things, right? And then imagine all of a sudden you just kind of rip the rug out from them and be like, nope, sorry, you can't access that. You need my permission to do that. That is not the best way to approach it, right? Like you had alluded to, and getting buy-in, you know, I think is one of those things where it really makes or breaks your kind of relationship with the team. And yeah. it allows people to trust you more when they're kind of brought into the process. It helps them have a little bit of ownership in the process themselves, right? Maybe you can delegate some of the work to them too and help them feel more involved in the process, as opposed to just, you know, security telling them no, which is what, you know, most of the horror stories you hear about security is like, security just says no. And, you know, they don't let us do things and they make it our lives more difficult. You know, working together with the team, I think, is such an understated thing, you know?
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, you know, you could even chalk that up, you know, that sometimes we ourselves are the threat in the environment. You know, I mean, if we don't handle something right, we don't communicate, we can damage that relationship to the point where we'll never be able to implement something because we didn't handle it correctly, you know? And I don't fault us, you know, I mean, we're very passionate people, you know, cybersecurity people are some of the most passionate people. And I think we have to be, you know, we're constantly causing friction. We're constantly butting heads. There's no way to be successful in the cybersecurity industry without being passionate for cybersecurity. But at the same time, if we don't communicate and we don't, you know, clearly lay out to our team what we're doing, you know, we ourselves are the threats in a way.
Yep. And what do you think about, so, you know, tiered admin model, I think is great. And, you know, having tier zero accounts, and, you know, for those who are listening or maybe not familiar with the tiered admin model, you know, it's essentially, you know, breaking down the administration of your environment and your network into different groups, right? Into different tiers, if you will. And, you know, with that, you know, you have security groups, you have OUs, you have all these things that are kind of designed, and you have administration for certain things like workstations and servers and things like that. What do you think of when it comes to like authentication, right? So I'm a domain admin, I need to authenticate to a server, you know, should we have MFA on those servers? You know, should there be MFA on other things? How do we lock down, you know, other authentication methods like SMB and things like that? What are your kind of high level thoughts on how you go, you know, from that the tiered admin model to then kind of tightening up a little bit from a networking perspective to make that, you know, a little bit more stricter and more strictly controlled?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in that scenario, I mean, you got your desktop admins. They're your tier twos. They can administer your desktops. You got your tier ones. They can administer servers. You got your tier zeros. They can administer domain admins. Tier zeros can't go back down to tier one. Tier one can't go down to tier two. Tier two can't go up to either one of them, and so on and so forth. So they're relegated to their individual slots, you know. Moving that into MFA, I found that on the tier zero side, it's really easy to implement MFA on the tier zero side. So implementing tier zero MFA, domain admin MFA for interactive logons, things like that, it's really easy to implement. Implementing protocol-based multi-factor on domain controllers, I haven't successfully been able to do it. It breaks things. Domain controllers have to communicate with so many different things and do so many different functions. Mm-hmm. If one of their protocols breaks, the ramifications are so large. I would caution somebody who's attempting to MFA protect protocols on a domain controller, you know, be careful, you know, monsters lie ahead. You know, moving on to the server side, you know, similar topic, you know, but I'm working on a project right now where, you know, breaking down OUs by the application group and breaking them out into their individual application group really does make it significantly easier to take those bite-sized chunks to enable MFA for protocol, for interactive login, for, you know, PowerShell sessions, for, you know, SSHing into devices and so on. Mm-hmm. Breaking it down into your application groups does make it drastically easier to implement that. You got to break it into your applications. You can't have the old school OU where everything sits in computers and then, you know, you just apply these massive blast radius policies to things. You got to break down your OU structures, get it down into bite-sized yep. chunks, start to monitor your traffic and see what's communicating, what's anticipated, what's not anticipated, and then build out your MFA policies based on that. For the desktop side, you know, it's kind of interesting. The desktop side is kind of like the domain controller side. They have to chat with everything. They have to communicate with everything. They have to be unfettered because, again, if you lose your user buy-in, all of a sudden you're the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Made our lives terrible. Why do you do this? And then you never get to do it again. So I would caution on MFAing protocols to and from desktops. And instead, I would MFA the user elevation. So, yep. or the window elevation. So if you want to elevate and you want to do anything administrative on a desktop, you got to MFA. You got to put in an MFA prompt, and you got to not only have a tiered secure or tier two account in order to do that, but you also have to MFA prompt in order to elevate a window. And you know, that's kind of my take on the MFA for tiered security.
Yeah, and you mentioned the protocol-based authentication and protocol-based MFA and things like that. And I think, you know, insecure legacy supported protocols is something that goes very hand in hand with this hardening discussion. You know, like SMB1 and LMNR and NVNS and those kinds of things. Those are things that generally are fairly low impact, but I'm curious to hear your perspective on kind of the impact and kind of the easeability, I guess, of disabling some of those legacy and insecure defaults like SMB1 and LMNR and NVNS and, you know, Microsoft DNS and all those things that, you know, have been traditionally used for, you know, like relaying attacks or poisoning and things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, talking about disabling legacy protocols, you know, whether it's NTLM V1 or SMB V1 or LLMR or RC4 and DES or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is, break your environment down into those chunks, break your environment down into those Active Directory OUs. You know, if you try to take the entire bull by the horns all up front, you're going to feel pain. The environment's going to feel pain. Everybody's going to feel pain. And then at some point in time, you're going to lose buy-in. You know, let's take like SMB version 1, for example. You know, I worked on a project for SMB V1. Had this initiative come down, you know, from a federal authority, said, hey, we got to get this out of the environment. You know, we can't do business with this federal authority anymore unless, you know, we can prove that we don't have any of these legacy protocols. And we got a big list of legacy protocols that had to get rid of. And we broke it into chunks and we set to work on, you know, application group by application group, removing these legacy protocols. It was definitely painful. It was definitely a lot of stuff or a lot of issues. We definitely broke things. But we broke things at a limited blast radius. We broke things mm-hmm. on a small scale. So the impact was minimal. At the end of the project, we came across SMB V1. SMB V1 was this big, nasty piece of storage that was some 15 years old, and we had to remove it. If we had started the project by just nuking the entire environment and causing problems, we would have never had the rapport and the buy-in that we needed at the end for that protocol. because we had to purchase $500,000 worth of storage in order to remove it. Mm-hmm. The organization wasn't prepared to purchase $500,000 worth of storage. The organization has lots of heartburn over purchasing $500,000 worth of storage. But because we had the buy-in and the rapport, and we had already worked through so much of the project that this was the last protocol, we had that management buy-in that allowed us to spend the money that we needed to spend in order to replace that one piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important to limit your blast radius. You have the tools through Active Directory to break down your application groups. You have the tools to limit your blast radius. You know, if you have a tiered security model and you're breaking down your application groups, you're already in a great position to start removing legacy protocols. And I feel for you. I feel for whoever's taking on that daunting task right now. You can get to the other side. But my advice would be is break it down and limit your blast radius so that way you can build your rapport. Because at some point in time, you're going to come across an application that only money can solve the problem. And you want to have the maximum rapport and the minimal impact to the environment for when you ask for that money.
Yeah. And it creates advocates, right? You're developing advocates for you, for the security team, for those initiatives. And, you know, you talked about breaking down those OUs and those application groups and things like that. And that ties into the other topic we want to talk about, which is probably one of the bigger topics I think we've talked about recently, which is benchmarks, right? The CIS benchmarks, hardening guides, things like that. And I know in discussion with you, you've done a lot of work on this and have a lot of experience with it. I think it would be good to hear your thoughts as a whole on benchmarks and why you like them. And then maybe we can talk about kind of some strategies and for kind of implementing those, kind of like we have for these other bullet points.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big advocate for CIS. I'm a big advocate for what they offer. You know, I'm a big advocate for what they're doing for the security community. I really like the CIS controls and how they give you the flexibility to interpret some things versus, you know, trying to implement, you know, NIST 800-171 or 153. You know, I think CIS does a really great job of mapping their controls to ISO and Sarbanes-Oxley and to NIST and giving people the ability to make security reasonable. Getting into the benchmarks and the hardening guides, I'm always amazed whenever I talk to a client or a customer or a peer that has CIS but has never used the benchmarks and the GPOs and, you know, has never gone into the workbench on CIS. And, you know, they just have it because, you know, they're trying to hit CIS, but they've never gone into the benchmarks. The benchmarks are a phenomenal tool. You know, you can go and download a Windows 10 or a Windows 11 benchmark GPO, and it'll build out your entire group policy for you. You can use Syscat to audit it, to make sure that you're being remediated. You can use Syscat to get the HTML output, so that way you can locate exactly which group policy may be causing you problems, and then it tells you exactly where to go inside the benchmark to fix it. You know, just trying to hand implement what the benchmarks provide for you. Mm-hmm. There's some 270 security changes that they make. Each one of them has a justification and a rationale. Each one of them has the exact group policy location that it's at, so you can fix it if you need to. Just implementing 270 security changes and having to change all those and having to test all those and having to go through change control and having to have, you know, team dialogue. And I mean, you're talking about years worth of work that, you know, for a few grand a year, you literally just saved a year's worth of work on hardening a desktop or hardening a server or hardening a domain controller. You know, and if you want to be part of the community, you can go in the community, post on the forum, super nice people, go in there and explain, you know, hey, I'm having this problem, or hey, I don't agree with this, or, you know, and, you know, have a reasonable discussion with people on a forum. you know, I think it's a phenomenal tool. I would advise anybody who's trying to pick, if you don't have a security compliance framework that you have to adhere to, but you want a security compliance framework, I highly recommend checking out CIS.
Yeah, and I like the ability to have a consistent baseline from system to system, right? When you think about Windows and you think about group policy and you think about an Active Directory environment, there are machines in your environment right now that have configuration drift, right? There's applications that are installed on them that are different from other systems. There are group policies that are applied that are different from other systems. And the benchmarks are great because it gives you a consistent standard to work from so that you always know, you know, if you have these specific policies applied, the system is going to be configured virtually the same from a configuration standpoint, right? You can, of course, have different software installed and different applications and things like that. But from a configuration standpoint, those systems are consistent, which means, you know, though you're getting consistent audit logs and you're getting consistent, you know, telemetry from that system, right? And there's a lot of benefits to having that be consistent from system to system, right?
And on top of that, you get the assessor and the SysCat tool that can then, you know, run against the system to verify all of that and then spit you out exact rationale for every single security setting, every single change. You know, I mean, you're getting consistency, you're getting rationale, you're getting a community, and you're saving time, effort, and work of having to build all these. I mean, it's a no-brainer. I mean, I don't think they get enough credit for what they're doing in the security community.
Yeah, and they're very regularly updated. You know, there's, I don't know how many benchmarks there are now, but there's, I don't know, hundreds of benchmarks for Windows and Microsoft 365
Red Hat, you know, I mean, you name it, it's probably in Palo Alto's, Juniper switches, Alcatel-Lucent switches, you know, Windows servers, Windows desktops, Windows 7, Windows 10, Windows, I mean, shouldn't be using Windows 7 anymore, but Windows 7, Windows 10, Windows 11, you know, there's benchmarks for nearly everything that you could possibly come up with. There's benchmarks in there. Yeah, I mean, I think I recently read something about, you know, there's 225 new benchmarks released in 2023.
Wow.
You know,
the amount you would learn just by reading through those benchmarks, those hardening guides, amount you would learn about Windows, about whatever, you know, benchmark you pick, is tremendous, right? And if for people who are listening who are maybe newer in the industry, if you're an IT admin or a help desk, reading through those hardening guides, or if you're a sysadmin, or even if you're on the offensive security side, you know, if you're a pen tester, reading through those hardening guides, reading through the benchmarks, seeing what security settings are set, is a great way to test your skills, both as a defender and somebody who's an attacker. One of the things that I think is interesting, I would love to do myself at some point, is take a Active Directory lab, like the GOAD lab, the game of Active Directory lab that is out there. I think it's by Orange Cyber Defense. I don't want to get that wrong, but it's the GOAD Active Directory lab. I think if you've heard of it, you probably know what I'm talking about. But it's an Active Directory lab. It's a simulated environment where you can practice a number of different Active Directory attack techniques. So there's Kerber roasting and ASRep roasting and, you know, all sorts of different Kerberos abuse and all sorts of Active Directory attacks. What would be cool is to take that Active Directory environment, deploy CIS benchmarks and the kind of the hardening guides against it, and see how those attacks are effective or not effective against that environment. That would be a great learning opportunity for anybody who's in security to do. And again, just kind of to the point of using those to be better, to learn, to harden your environment, I think it is a really good tool. And, you know, all those benchmarks are free. You know, you can pay for the workbench, right? You can pay extra for a workbench and or for a membership and some of the other perks, but all those benchmarks you can just download, which is great.
Yeah, I I can't say it enough. I don't think they get enough credit for what they're providing the security community. And, you know, being able to take a hardened image and take that assessor output and being able to go to the Goat Lab and just have it where you can go down the row and look at a non-hardened desktop versus a hardened desktop and be able to test between the two and see, you know, like, okay, you know, I want to validate the rationale here that they've put in place, you know, and having that and having such a transparent, you know, output of what they're doing and being able to test against that. And then further, I mean, you know, if you do get the membership and you are part of the workbench and you have that community, I can't tell you how useful it is to be able to go inside the community and speak to the actual people who are building and developing the next set of benchmarks. And you can actively participate and say, you know, I've gone on there. And then, you know, the CIS benchmarks, there's some things that I change. Don't get me wrong. There's some things that I have to change because they don't work with a specific environment or they cause too much friction and I'll change them. But I'll go on to the community and I'll have a discussion with people about it. And, you know, that we can go back and forth on why and the rationale and the attack pattern, and then being able to do like what you're referencing, being able to go into a lab environment. And because you have all the information, because it's all readily available, there's settings in Windows before I was introduced to CIS that I had no clue that these settings even existed.
Yeah.
I had no clue that, you know, Windows had all this extra stuff that was baked in because it's either legacy holdover from all the way back to Windows 95 still being pumped into, you know, Windows 10, or, you know, it's just a function that I didn't know about, or, you know, talking about, you know, the sprawl of like the Xbox gaming service inside of Windows 10. I mean, you know, Lord help, you got to disable that because that does a lot more than just Xbox service, you know?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. So much. You know, that gets into the privacy debate and, you know, telemetry that gets sent off to who knows where and all that stuff, as well as the security aspects of it.
Yeah. But having that community, that's the people that are literally building the benchmarks are accessible. I mean, you know, I can't just call up Palo Alto and have a conversation with Palo Alto's developers, you know, I mean, that's not how that works. I can't, you know, call up CrowdStrike or Carbon Black and say, hey, you know, I'd like to talk to a programmer today, please.
Yeah.
But exactly. Having that access right there available at your fingertips to just, you know, like, hey, you know, why are we doing this? You know, why do I need to disable this service? Why do I need to, you know, remove this feature? Why, you know, help me understand. I see the rationale. I understand. But it causes all these problems. Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. Your community is right there. It's all included. It's like a self-sustaining ecosystem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really big part of security, and what we do is the community. You know, I think out of all the industries, you know, that I'm just kind of, you know, aware of, you know, or have interest in, and I have, you know, some visibility into what's going on right in the world of the internet and you know, the ecosystems, the InfoSec community, the cybersecurity community, is really proud of the community that it's built and that it fosters. There's a lot of good people. There's got a lot of good resources in the community and a lot of people like doing the good fight, you know, and doing it the right way. And there's a lot of people that can help too. And you just mentioned, you know, a number of resources just within CIS alone, that can be helpful.
I mean, look at, you know, what we're doing right now on this podcast, and we're communicating and we're opening up about things. And, you know, I mean, this is a rarity. I mean, especially, you know, like I said, you know, I come from a third generation, you know, I mean,
yep.
Three generations of technical professionals. I mean, my grandfather, he was a Unix admin, shared nothing. None of his information did he ever want to share, ever. He did not want to lose any sort of job security or any sort of whatever. He was closely guarded and protected of all of his data.
Yep.
And you know, I think now, you know, we're I love this, that the security community has become so much more over the last decade because it is such an inclusive and sharing and open community, because we're all dealing with the struggles, man. We're all dealing with the imposter syndrome. We're all dealing with the overworked. We're all dealing with the, you know, hey, you know, I'm this one guy at this one place and I've been fighting against, you know, the grain. I feel like, you know, the salmon swimming upstream and I never get to, you know, my final whatever. And it's nice. It's nice to have a community to just talk to, you know, talk to professionals like yourself, talk to, you know, others, you know, and being able to commiserate and being able to, you know, have these open podcasts where we're talking about, you know, we're talking about, you know, giving away trade secrets, you know, giving away things that, you know, but the previous generation would have said, you know, no, can't give that away because, you know, I'll be replaced, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So I think that's a good, point to kind of put a bow on it. I know there's a ton more we could talk about, and, you know, we'll have to do this again sometime and, you know, chop it up on another subject or something, tangentially related to it. But what's your closing thoughts, advice, for IT admins who are kind of in charge of Windows Active Directory, IT as a whole, IT security, kind of what's your sage advice for those who are kind of in the fight day to day?
You know, take it in bite-sized chunks, be communicative, find yourself a collaborative pen tester. Those would be my sage advice for everybody out there fighting a good fight. You know, be communicative, be open with your team, get your buy-in, limit your blast radius, keep on fighting the good fight, and find yourself a collaborative pen tester.
Well said. I like it. I like it a lot. So in closing, Nathan, I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your expertise and your experience and your perspective. I hope everybody has gotten value out of this discussion. And if you have, let us know. Let me know on LinkedIn or wherever you're listening to this. Let me know if you enjoyed this episode, and we'll definitely do more like this. So Nathan, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time today talking with us all. And I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I just really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Spencer. I appreciate it. You have a great rest of your day as well.
And with that, that's our episode. You can find us on offsec.blog and at secureit360.com. We post new episodes every Wednesday, and we're posting a bunch of content on LinkedIn and on the internet and our blog and our website and all of our social media. So you can find us pretty much everywhere. And with that, we'll see you next week.